Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Darren is swinging that over to me. I was just going to go grab the answers to the quiz that we just
gave all our attendees
for our Collegiate Agronomy Workshop. We're just wrapping that up here in Baltic, South Dakota at the Morton Center at the Field Day site. So we are live right now, and we're talking about agronomy today with a bunch of college students and many others involved in agriculture. It's really a lot of fun. We've been going through everything from soil testing to drain tile, herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, pesticide safety, water quality, a lot of great stuff to talk about.
Well, okay, I thought Brian would do pretty well on the quiz that I came up with here, and Brian says it's too hard. Like, really, Brian? Are you not paying attention during the workshop, or what's going on? But honestly, the day was kind of a blur. It went by really fast. There's so many things to talk about here in agriculture, and we'll give you a little sample of that. Let's just go through some of these questions, Brian, on our quiz.
Yep. Okay, so here's question number one. What electrical charge does soil have? And we spent a little time on this, so everybody should have gotten that. That's negative electrical charge. For high-yielding crops, base saturation potassium should fall in the following range. And what we're looking for there is 4 to 8%. We put that right on the sheet in your workshop book there, talking about base saturation. Potassium, incredibly huge, 4 to 8%. That's what we're looking for. Question number three, in a 12-inch soil sample to convert parts per million to pounds per acre, what number needed to multiply your results by? So, Darren, here's where you start getting a little more tricky. So we talked about this, but the first thing people are thinking about is multiply times two, because we're usually talking 6-inch soil test. Well, this is a 12-inch soil test, so we have to multiply times four.
Is this the one you slipped up on, Brian?
No. I did on the one before because I was trying to go quick, and I just saw 4%, and I hit that instead of – it was 4 to 6, and there's also a 4 to 8 choice.
So same problems you had growing up, right? You're trying to go through these tests so fast.
Well, I figured I didn't have to pass it or anything, so otherwise I'd have gone back through it and looked at it again.
All right. Okay. Well, question number four, the molecular size of which nutrient leads to increased porosity of the soil? We talk about calcium, so D would be our answer there. And calcium being a big molecule, there's more airspace around big molecules, and that's a big deal in your soil. Number five, when lime is applied to your soil, which products are the result of that application? So when you have a low pH acidic soil, you've got excess hydrogen in the soil. When you add lime to it, you get three things: free calcium, carbon dioxide, and water. That's the resulting products. Okay, next question was true or false. Increasing soil organic matter allows soils to warm more quickly in the spring. That's true. It actually does. Having more organic matter in the soil is good for that. The next question, for every 1% of organic matter increase in the soil, the average soil can hold 4% more water.
Yep,
that's
so
a big deal.
Yep, so for the most part, we went kind of in order. So that the answer to that one was on page 18 in your books, for example. And the previous question, the answer to that was in there as well on page 18 on the previous slide.
Between these four nutrients, which is the most leachable? Potassium, phosphorus, zinc, or sulfur? Well, the first three are ones that don't leach very much, but sulfur is definitely a nutrient in the sulfate form that can leach out of your soil. Organic matter mineralization typically releases 20 to 30 pounds of nitrogen per year. So we've got 20 there per 1% of organic matter.
Yep. See, now this is where Darren got a little bit tricky going back to question eight when he says sulfur. Well, we usually say sulfate is really leachable. So sulfur, when it's elemental sulfur, isn't as leachable as what sulfate is going to be. But anyway, yep, we're going to sulfur there.
All right. Through mineralization of organic matter, through each 1% of organic matter in the soil, how much phosphate will it release? Well, that's 4 to 7 pounds.
Yep, so both of those answers also on page 18.
If your CEC, or cation exchange capacity, is 14, approximately how many pounds of nitrogen can your soil hold at any one time? Well, we often use the CEC times 10 as a good place to start. So 14 times 10 would be 140 pounds. Now, that's not a scientific fact, but that's a great rule of thumb and a place to start, as we mentioned earlier today. Okay, why do sulfur and most micronutrient deficiencies show up in the newest leaf tissue?
Yep, and this one we didn't spend enough time on. This was a little bit trickier as well.
I did try to spend time on that, Brad, and
bit.
I offered the suggestion that you might want to underline this, or you might want to highlight it, or you might want to put a star by it. As you may notice, I might have done about 20 times during the day, which happens to coincide with 20 questions that we had. But anyway, so yes, they are non-mobile within the plant. That's why I see those nutrient deficiencies towards the top of the plant. Which nutrient deficiency shows up in the older leaves of corn by burning the tip of the leaf and then working its way down the midrib? Well, that's classic nitrogen deficiency. Okay, the next question. When spraying Extendamax, you must make sure to, and all of these answers are correct, that the applicator is certified to spray restricted use products, that the wind is between 3 and 10 miles an hour, you are done spraying 2 hours before sunset, and there are no sensitive crops downwind from where you're spraying. We're up to question 15. Under which soil conditions should you reduce your metribuzin use rate? Select all that apply. Well, the two that would apply are high soil pH and sandy soils. Those would be the two conditions that we're concerned about. Which of the following soybean pre-emerge herbicides can be used effectively in no-till? Metribuzin, Prowl H2O, and Valor can all be used in no-till. Trifluralin cannot. Number 17, what does Ag PhD recommend always including in the spray tank when spraying Liberty? Well, we like ammonium sulfate when we spray Liberty. Of course, we don't like that when we're trying to spray any dicamba product. Okay, which application timings does Ag PhD recommend when using neonic insecticides? The only one is seed treatment usage. Number 19, which corn diseases are bacterial rather than fungal? Well, the two that we had here that are correct answers are Xanthomonas, or bacterial leaf streak, and Goss's wilt. And finally, the last question, LD50 stands for lethal dose 50%. Which substance has the lowest LD50 and therefore the greatest human toxicity? If all products were ingested at the same dose, well, the choices are atrazine, glyphosate, caffeine, nicotine, or vitamin D. And the answer is vitamin D, Brian. That's kind of shocking. We may have to talk about that a little more.
Yep, I think we will. Well, once again, we're just wrapping things up at the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop here in Baltic, South Dakota. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be right back with some questions from our audience after this.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio here, broadcasting live from the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop in the Morton Center at the Ag PhD Field Day.
Yep, we're super excited. We're going to give away 20 college scholarships here in about half an hour. to attendees of this particular workshop. We're planning to do this again next year. It's been a lot of fun today. But what we're going to do here right now is start taking questions from our audience. So we'll start right over here. And if you could, just say your name. Just give us your first name and where you're from, and then ask your question. We'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Yes, I'm Mike from pretty nearby here, Colton, South Dakota. And I was just curious, we didn't get to spend enough time about how tiling can improve roads.
Oh, man, Mike, come on. That's Brian, how much did he give him? Because I thought this has got to be a setup, doesn't it? I mean, come on. You okay. Got one of your buddies on here that's going to ask you a tiling question. There goes the first segment here. Way to go, Mike.
All right.
So, tiling improving roads, Brian. Go ahead.
Yep. So one of the most important things that we talk about with tiling all the time.
And we got an example right out here, by the way. Right outside the Morton Center is a road
that I was just looking to see if I had.
That we've had some issues with over the years. And the township board, their solution had been, well, let's just add another load of gravel. And then next year, let's add another load of gravel. And next year, let's add another load of gravel because the road was soft and there were ruts in it and all the neighbors had trouble getting through. And anyway, what the problem ended up being is we had a drainage issue in the area that the road.
Hang on one second, Darren. Mark, throw that up. Throw my presentation back up on the screen again. It's probably about slide number 120 or something, and then I'll take it over from there.
Okay, so our problem with this road is that the road came in, and it's on a downward slope, and the road now cuts across and blocks the flow of water. And the I don't know if this ever happens in anyone else's area, but the culvert maybe wasn't in exactly the low spot. So it wasn't really properly draining things, and all of a sudden we're holding back water on two different neighbors with this road. And so the key thing is getting everybody to work together. Well, guess what? They both had to drain onto Brian. So when two neighbors are like, wow, we got a drainage issue, and Brian's like, yep, we can solve that. All we got to do is drain it on me. And they're like, really? You're okay with that? Brian's like, well, the water's coming on me anyway. And plus, you guys are uphill with the water problem. What do you think I am downhill? I've got this big soggy area in my pasture every year because you guys are soggy uphill. So, yeah, let's work together. So we ended up doing a tiling project that involved three neighbors, three farmers, and bored a hole underneath the road to run that tile line. And now all of a sudden, magically, the road's pretty firm. We haven't had to add more gravel every year, and things are working out
well.
Yeah,
but all right, Darren didn't tell the story 100% accurately. So I was living in this house right here for a long time, and what bothered me is I drive this road out here every single day, and every spring the township's hauling a bunch of gravel. I'm a taxpayer, and I'm like, why are we hauling all this gravel? And it didn't take me long to figure out, ooh, we got water standing on the other side. The road is serving as a dam. So if you notice now, when they build new interstate highways, what do? They put tile right on each side, so they force the water. They tell the water where to go. So what I always tell farmers is, you know, when anybody's giving you a hard time about, oh, it's your big trucks destroying roads, I'd say, oh, water has always been and will always be the number one enemy of roads. If we can solve the water problem, then usually the road is going to last tremendously longer. So that's the whole thing. So, yeah, like right out here, we just tiled, bored under the road. Ever since then, haven't had to haul any gravel. It's been awesome. So anyway, this is what I tell people all the time, too. We can save the average person an awful lot of money by doing our work appropriately out in the field. So, you know, the average person driving on this road here had no idea really what's going on. Well, if we just do our job out in the field, that turns out to be great for the environment, turns out to be great for the crop. Now we made the road a lot better and saved the taxpayers a lot of money.
Well, the other thing, Brian, is the interstate highways. And it's interesting when they're building new
That's what I said. And, you know, they know that.
And I think that's the best spot for farmers and non-farmers to really see this in practice.
Yeah.
You know, that you can see it as they're building these roads. They're putting tile in.
All right, let's get to the next question.
My name's Trace from Northeast Iowa. We talked a little bit about gall midge and soybeans, but we didn't talk about tar spot and corn. So.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, that's a fun problem too. Another one that there isn't a great answer for. With tar spot, this is a relatively new disease. I think we've seen it in the U.S. since 2015. It's really been showing up and started to be documented. Some of the universities, University of Wisconsin, I know, is doing a lot of work on this. in terms of predicting when we're going to have it based on weather conditions and climate. Well, last year, their model predicted that we had the right environment to have tar spot across most of the Midwest, all the way out into Montana. I think eastern Montana even had enough moisture and the right weather conditions that they could have had it had that.
Okay, so what do we do about it?
Been there. Well, a couple things. First of all, one of the things that we learned in northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, where tar spot was the worst, is that gray leaf spot was an even worse robber of yield. So if we manage the gray leaf spot well and we timed the fungicide applications properly for gray leaf spot management, our yield loss from tar spot was significantly reduced. So that was a big thing. Now, fungicides can be effective at holding tar spot off. It's long been thought to be the product of two different fungal species that cause this disease. But in the United States, we've really only found one. And so that one strain of fungus, if we put fungicides out there preventatively and get it out ahead, products like Dalaro, for example, are labeled, we can do a good job reducing the amount of tar spot. We haven't completely wiped it out. So we're still
learning
more.
How about tolerance on varieties?
The big thing this year is the tar spot happened to hit where a number of different corn breeding companies had their trials. So we got some really good ratings now on tar spot, at least 1 year data. Some of the companies have got a couple different years of observations now with tar spot on all their hybrids. So most seed companies now can tell you at least which ones are really not good. They can't definitively tell you, well, for sure these ones are really good, because it might just be, well, it didn't hit where these hybrids were quite as hard, or the timing might have been just off, but they can definitely tell you which hybrids are not good. So that would be a good question to ask.
It's funny, as farmers, we want to have ideal conditions and have no problems ever. On the research side, though, we want disaster. We want everything thrown at us possible, because that's how we learn the most.
It's fun talking to the researchers, too, because they're like, oh, it was a great year. There was so much disease pressure. I'm like, hey, hold on. I farm. Well, I know it's not good for you, but it was great for us. And it will be good for you long term, because now we get these great ratings, and that definitely helps. So it is something that we're learning more about. We don't have a complete fix. It's kind of like bacterial leaf streak, where we don't see huge yield loss just from tar spot alone. We see it from, hey, there's tar spot, but there's also gray leaf spot, and there's also northern corn leaf blight, and we've got some other issues.
Yep. So try to find tolerant varieties,
healthy,
use fungicides.
We're going to be much better.
All right, let's take the next question.
Hi, my name is Pete from Minnesota, and I was wondering, in your book, you, under corn soil insecticides, why don't you want to mix bifenthrin with fertilizer?
The problem is the compatibility. So if you want to try that, you can jar test, but there's a reason why there's Capture LFR. The LFR stands for liquid fertilizer ready. If you take the generic Capture or the old Capture, like Brigade, for example, mixing with fertilizer, we've had many problems over the years. So especially when you think about in the Midwest, it's very often cold in the spring. So we've got cold weather, plus we're trying to mix fertilizer and this insecticide, which aren't super compatible. It just doesn't work very well. That's why that LFR formulation costs more, because they spent a bunch of money on developing something different, have some different adjuvants basically in there to help it mix better with fertilizer, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah, the other way is you could buy the generic EC formulation, not the LFR. You can buy the generic EC, and the EC stands for enjoy cleaning, because you're going to do it a lot.
What a lot of people do, if they want to use the straight old product, not the LFR product, they just have a whole separate system. So, you know, then they might have it meet right down at the bottom, but they've got them completely separate. You do not want to mix those things typically. Otherwise, usually we have problems. I'd say the same thing about fungicide. So there are some premixes of fungicide and insecticide. You know, you think about Manticore and Temetree LFR. Those are fine, but otherwise, if you're going to take, let's say, Headline, and you're going to take Capture, and you say, oh, I'm just going to mix those, I don't know. We've had problems with that. We don't advise that. So either have a separate system or buy the premix stuff. It might cost just a little more, but then at least it does mix and it works.
Hey, great questions here today from the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop. We'll be right back taking more questions from our audience, and also a little bit later in the show announcing some scholarship winners today, too. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm in the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions. Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting live from the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop today at the Morton Center at the Ag PhD Field Day site. And I'm hoping, Brian, there's some ag communication majors out here. I've been looking for a replacement co-host for a long time on the show.
I thought you were going to say for yourself.
After all these years, but, well, we'll see. Maybe we'll find one today. All right, let's get to the next question. Are we back here?
No, we're right
up front.
Here.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Mitchell Oswald from Dexter, Minnesota, and we were talking about plant growth regulators a little bit today.
Yep.
And I was listening to your show earlier and how to use gibberellic acid on some pasture gum, but where have you seen plant growth regulators play a role in your operation, both at planting time and then later throughout the season?
Thanks.
You know, this is an area that's really growing quickly in agriculture, and for everybody here in the audience, they've heard me say this about 10 times. I just got back from New Zealand, and I was down visiting the world record wheat grower and the world record barley grower, and their crops are right now, you know, in full development. They'll be harvesting here in just the next few weeks. And I would say I'm a 6-foot-tall man, and their crops are barely above knee-high, just barely above my kneecaps. And you think about, well, how tall do wheat and barley get when you're fertilizing like crazy, going for world record yields? Probably a little taller than that, maybe waist high or even a little bit better. And what happens when you have fertility levels that are high and you're pushing those crops for high yields? Well, you get floppy crops. They lay down in almost any small grain field you drive by. You probably see a little area here or there that's laying down out in the field. My dad used to tell me, well, I got carried away on the nitrogen in that spot of the field. I got too much growth, not enough stalk, and it's fallen over. I don't know what the real story is, but what those guys are doing to keep the height down on their crops is using a couple shots of growth regulators to reduce
specifically
that stem
elongation.
Specifically
which ones, though?
Specifically a product called Palisade is one that gets used quite often.
And that can be used here in the United States. There are a lot of wheat producers who are using Palisade. Our concern, so we're talking basically anti-growth. In other words, we want less growth. So there are different ways to look at this. Gibberellic acid is going to increase stem elongation, and with something like Palisade, that's going to decrease it. So if you're trying to keep the plant shorter, Palisade for some of these small grain crops, that's a pretty good idea. To make the stem bigger, so if you have silage or if you have pasture, then we want to use gibberellic acid, something like Rise Up Smartgrass. Otherwise, we've used MegaGrow, for example. It's a plant growth regulator, IBA, and cytokinin. You can do that too. There are a lot of different products that will have gibberellic acid, IBA, and or cytokinin in there. And those are some of the things you may consider. And there are different times where you would want to do them or not. Like with gibberellic acid, for example, the plant is really good at producing gib when it's warm. When it's cold, not very good. So you would want to spray when it's cold in the early spring on your pasture or on your silage. And you'd want to spray in the fall on your pasture. If you do it in the middle of the summer, it's not going to pay. So anyway, those are the ones that we've used. The MegaGrow, that's the only patented safener for Roundup that there is. It can make it safer even on Roundup-ready crops and help the recovery time and all that. And we've seen better growth overall out of the plant. I would say MegaGrow foliar anytime with Roundup, gibberellic acid in the situations that I mentioned, and Palisade to shorten small grains. There are going to be a lot more of these things coming in the future, though.
There are. And you look at specialty crops where you've got crops that are worth thousands and thousands of dollars per acre. Well, those growers have been doing different growth regulators for years, like in flower production, for example. But you're seeing some of the high-yielding producers in corn and soybeans starting to do more with plant growth regulators. But they will tell you that is so far down the list of what they're doing. They have to get so many pieces in place before that's
like
one
we talked about earlier, drainage first, then fertility, then let's start talking about some of these other things. All right, let's get to the next question here.
I'm Matt from Rogers, Minnesota, and my question is regarding manganese. A lot of the universities put out information that mang isn't worth applying. It either gets tied up or it interacts with the phosphorus. How can we get areas that are down to 3 or 4 parts per million up over 20?
Okay, that's a great question because we face some of that same stuff on our farm.
Yep.
And, you know, when it comes to manganese, when we look today at reading a soil test, manganese, I think on our 12 steps, was down about 9 or 10 or 11. It's way down towards the bottom, right? So we've got to get the things up top right first. Soil pH being the top one. And when we get our soil pH in line, what we often find is more manganese starting to come available in our soils. So even though you haven't put any on, we start seeing a little more manganese. One thing that we saw...
Well, what he's getting at here is we want to see that pH down to 6.5 or maybe a hair less.
Yeah,
and one of the challenges in a lot of Minnesota soils, we're talking 7, 7.5, 8, and now we got an issue.
Yeah, it's true. There's no doubt about it. And on our farm, too, I'll say when we've done grid soil sampling, any place where our soil pH is 6.3 or less, we have higher levels of manganese. When our soil pH is 6.8 or higher, then we have lower levels of manganese. So the sweet spot's somewhere in the middle. We got to get that pH in line and then get our other nutrients in balance. And oftentimes, just putting on potassium, for example, where it's really short, now we've got manganese available. What? How did that happen? Well, you just, again, getting things in balance makes things work out.
Yep. So get things in balance, number one. Well, number one is pH. Get things in balance, number two. Number three, consider some manganese with a planter, for example. So my example off our own farm here and our high-yield plots, one of the first year, I think it was year two, Randy Doughty was here. And so Doughty's side by side with me. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing here. I'm reading the soil test to see him low on manganese. He also saw that. I didn't know what he was doing. He didn't know what I was doing. I spent like $50 on manganese, and he had better levels in his plant all season long. I saw the results at the field day, and I go, doggone it. How did he do that? And he didn't spend near what I did. He spent probably one-third. Well, what he had done is used some manganese chelate at planting. and then he tried to lower the pH a little more. So those are big keys. We want to get that manganese close to where we need it, and you can also do a little bit of foliar feeding with manganese too. But manganese absolutely has an impact on emergence. So we want to get started even right away, very early. We want something with that planter.
Let's go over here for another question.
I'm Connor from Central South Dakota, and you guys talked earlier about no-till situations that phosphorus is hard to get deep in the soil.
Yep.
So I was wondering if, other than strip-till, if you guys have any suggestions to get it punched deeper in a no-till situation.
Okay, some people will talk about cover crops and, oh, yep, we're gonna move more stuff down with cover crops. Here's one of my problems personally. I am very impatient. I can wait 10 years, but I'm unwilling to wait 10 years for some of these things to happen.
Brian's barely got 10 years left, Connor. That's the problem, so he needs it right now. But what I'll say is this. If you're truly going to stay in no-till forever and you say, nope, there is zero reason I ever am going to till, then cover crops are your best option. Get something that's going to root down deep. And as those roots decay, release some of those nutrients, and you can spread things a little bit that way. But the biggest challenge in no-till is that nutrient stratification, because phosphorus just doesn't move on its own. So I don't care how much rain you're getting in heavy soils in central South Dakota, you're not going to move phosphorus down very much more than a half an inch or something like that. So either you're doing some strip-till, you're deep injecting it to begin with, or you're going to be using cover crops. It's going to be one of those things.
Here's what I would do if I was in your situation. Either, number one, before I got into the no-till, I would just deep inject 10 years worth of phosphorus, and I'm not kidding you, and then I just go no-till. Or
if you don't go broke first, that'll work great.
It's no big deal. But anyway.
It sure is when you're raising 30 bushel wheat.
Well, then 10 years worth of fertilizer doesn't cost that much money. But anyway, the other choice is just take a coulter. Just a narrow coulter and inject maybe once every 2 or 4 years. You don't have to put phosphorus down every year. It's not going anywhere. And my example of that is, I'll bet many people in the room, especially you guys who are farming, that have been farming for many years, you probably can still find today where grandpa spread manure 40, 50 years ago, right? Okay, that just shows you phosphorus isn't going anywhere. That's why I say you can put 10 years out if you want to, if you get it down in the ground,
okay,
so it's safe.
Okay, so your coulter deep would be one thing. The other thing would just be, even with your planter, if you're doing a 2x2, or like we showed at our field day here, like some of the high-yield growers are doing, putting a 2x2 in each side of the row,
yes,
you can at least get it down a little bit, where you know what's going to dry out in the summer, the top inch and then
yep.
the next
inch. And if you've done maybe a tiny bit in furrow and then you've got some 2x2, okay, now you're in pretty good shape. What a lot of the no-till guys try is high rates in furrow, and then they hurt their stand. I mean, it's a real problem. So you just can't do that.
That is a challenge, fertilizing in no-till, no doubt about it. It's just one of the many topics we're tackling here at the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
We started utilizing the DuoReact system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips, so you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Center here at the Ag PhD Field Day site. Live from the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop. Well, that's a lot of stuff to say there, Brian, to qualify things.
Yeah, basically, how about we get to questions?
College students from across the country here today and a number of other people, too. And we're taking agronomy questions here from the audience. Let's start back here.
Hi, I'm Aaron Wagner from Rose Creek, Minnesota. You listed how tile and fertilization are top priorities.
Yep.
Where does irrigation fall in on that list?
Ooh, well, awesome.
Well, irrigation, usually we're right up at that same level as tile. So our problem right here, for example, I can't put up a whole bunch of center pivots because we have granite down below us and I don't have access. I'd have to dig through the granite, and apparently several people have tried and quit because they ran out of money. So we just don't have access to water. But yes, it just depends on where you're at in the country and where you're at in terms of a water supply. But irrigation is unbelievably important. So if you come to the field day, the Ag PhD field day, and you listen to a lot of the top growers, that's the first thing they're going to mention. For a lot of them, they have sandy soil, so they don't need drainage, but what they need is irrigation. And you know what? Even in heavier soil, you think about it for just 1 second. I had a slide up a little earlier about what were the world record yields, okay? And when I ask most farmers, what did I say earlier today? What do most farmers tell you is their number one problem? What's the number one yield limiting factor? Rain. Well, if we've eliminated the rain issue, well, then what? Okay, then it's really just on us. Okay, we need to do a better job managing everything else. There's nothing really holding you back. Other than, I mean, once you've gotten that rainfall taken care of, yeah, there's the world records, 542 on corn, 171 on beans, 249 on wheat, 205 on barley. If rain is no longer your problem, what is? That's always our challenge as farmers and agronomists. And let's put it this way, usually what the limiting factor is within our control. It's fertility, it's variety, it's weed control, all these other things.
Yeah, you put in irrigation and you put drain tile underneath, and now water's not the factor anymore, and then you get to what you can control, which is great.
Yep. Right, so by the way, Darren mentioned it, but water quality with irrigation. Just if you're going to irrigate, make sure you're testing that water. We find very commonly that the water is junk. And then eventually what happens to our fields? Well, our fields become junk. Too much salt, too high a pH, there are issues. So we got to make sure we find a good water source and or treat that water.
My name is Hunter from Millbank, South Dakota. We talked about leaching out in nitrogen. Yep. And I was just wondering, what are your guys' thoughts on nitrogen stabilizers and when do you most prefer to use them?
Oh, great question. Nitrogen stabilizers. So we are concerned about nitrate leaching. And depending on where you're at, if you're in lighter soils, that's obviously a bigger concern. There are other ways that nitrogen can be lost, like denitrification and volatilization. So there are a number of things you want to protect against. If you're incorporating that nitrogen, you've kind of taken the volatilization piece out, and you've solved that problem for the most part, but you still could have denitrification. So when you're thinking about using a nitrogen stabilizer, there are a bunch of different factors that are going to give you situations where it's going to pay more often. For example, if you're using high rates of nitrogen and you're putting it all on in one shot, well, that's that much longer until the crop actually needs it. So in those cases, nitrogen stabilizer is going to help more. If you're in a high rainfall environment, if you've got lighter soils, those are going to be big areas where they're going to pay more for you. If you're going to be putting nitrogen on top of the ground, that's a situation where volatilization can be a big problem, and you're going to have to do that too. Brian just put up on our screen here for everybody in our audience, in the live audience here, some different situations. When the pH is outside of that ideal range, when temperatures are warm, wet or years, environmental concerns in the area, those kinds of things.
Yeah, winter stabilizer is most likely to pay. Let's put it this way. There are a lot of products sold in agriculture, right? And very often, if you're a farmer, you're like, oh my gosh, how much stuff are you guys trying to sell me? Everything works in the right situation. And that's always what we're trying to figure out as farmers and agronomists is when is it most likely to pay? So we can't promise you nitrogen stabilizers are going to pay. But if we start having some of these conditions, we go, okay, now it's more likely, now it's more likely, now it's more likely. So yeah, we're big believers in nitrogen stabilizers in the right situations. Yep, absolutely.
Okay, let's take another question over here.
My name's Darren Hageman. I'm from Northeast Nebraska. So on our family farm, we've been no-till for about 20 years now.
Yep.
Cool.
Would it pay to go and take the top 2 inches off when you do your soil test?
And look for stratification and just see. Yeah, you know, we've got a lot of guys that are doing that. They'll maybe take either the top 1 inch or the top 3 inches and just see, okay, let's take the top 3 inches and compare to the next 3 inches down rather than just pulling the 6-inch sample.
Yeah, but see, what I would tell you is just continue doing your soil samples like you've been doing your soil samples. But I would take a couple, 3 different spots, maybe, you know, hilltop, side hill, valley, whatever. Take a couple, 3 different spots and test every 1 or 2 inches and just keep going down all the way to, for me, I'd go down at least to 12 inches, maybe even 18 or 24. It's not going to take you that long. You're not going to spend that much money. But then you're going to start to get an idea. And if you find in all 3 of those spots, 90% of our fertility is in the top 2 inches. Okay, now we need to start thinking a little better. And, you know, it's not just does my ground need fertilizer, it's where does my ground need fertilizer. That's part of the thing we've looked at, too, on our farm and why we kind of like strip-till on some fields because we've loaded up the top 6 inches. Okay, we've looked at guys, if you go back to like the 70s, Herman Warsaw was the first guy in the United States consistently raising 300 bushel corn. In the 80s, early 90s, Francis Childs was the first guy consistently raising 400 bushel corn. We've got soil tests from both of those guys and deep tests. And I'll just tell you this, their top 6 inches was built up, but guess what? The next 6 was pretty good. Next 6 was pretty good. 18 to 24 for those two guys was better than I find on most 0 to 6 inch tests that I get today from a lot of farmers around the country. So if I've got the top 6 built up, if there's some way you can do it, try to get more of the fertility down a little deeper. Now for nitrate, sulfate, boron, it doesn't matter. They're going to move down naturally. But when we start talking, especially phosphorus, zinc, maybe potassium, those are the ones. If there's a way we could place it down there somehow, some way, that'd be great.
All right, now back to Connor's question from Central South Dakota. So he's in a no-till situation. Hey, I love that you're in a no-till situation in Northeast Nebraska. With those rolling hills, yep. For those of you listening today or in the audience here that haven't been in Northeast Nebraska, there's pretty tough hills those guys deal with. It's not an easy area to farm. And what's happened over the years is there's been enough erosion off those hills where the valleys are really fertile and the side hills and hilltops are not. And pH is really vary. So yep. I like the reduced tillage method of farming in that area. I think that's great. And the challenge now is just, okay, I lost nutrients here on the side hill. How do I get this back? And here's a spot where if cover crops can work into that rotation, I love that. I love protecting that soil as much as we can. I would personally love it if we had a small grain in the rotation, if we could make that pay. I know it's hard because you're in Nebraska and you want to raise big corn yields, but you can raise big wheat yields there too.
Yeah, I don't really think much about that. What I think about is how can I place fertilizer deeper?
I'm just thinking about the erosion angle. But, yes, I get it.
But be creative. I mean, this is what I was saying earlier. People are like, well, it's either conventional till or no till. No, you can do other things. You could strip till. You could just do a Coulter. You could deep inject. You could also go through, let's say, one out of, you could do one-fourth of the field or do it in strips, one-fourth of the field every year. Then you come back the next fourth, come back the next fourth. So you've done just a little bit. You know, there are a lot of ways to do things. You just try some stuff out and just see. But all I'm telling you is, yeah, if it was me, I'd look hard for that stratification. I think you probably have some.
Okay, let's take another question here.
Good afternoon. I'm Mike from Prairie Village, Kansas, just outside Kansas City. We don't have as much big ag as you guys all have, but one of the things that a lot of my friends are asking me about, because I'm going through school right now, on the micro-scale farming size or some of the smaller scale farms that they do, some great information on the soil testing and the nutrient replacement and things.
Yep.
Is that scalable? So if they go down to somebody who's doing less than an acre, can we just do the math for the same thing for the nutrients and all?
Absolutely.
Sure. Sure.
And, you know, that's the whole thing here. It doesn't matter, really, what your farm size is. It's the same stuff.
Or what crop you're raising.
Right.
You know, for the most part, many of these things are going to be the same. Now, there's some crops that may like a different pH level than others. But for the most part, the nutrient levels, if you've got a ground that's good for growing corn, it's good for growing just about anything. So you're right. Whether the size of
well,
the farm is
yeah,
big
but
or
not,
small, we
not
can,
necessarily.
We can
different crops want different pH levels, different nutrient levels, those kind of things. But, yeah, then you get crop specific.
All right, we'll talk more about that and take more questions from our audience here right after this. Stay tuned.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
No secrets here, we all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop. And one of the cool things that we're doing here is the first time we've done one of these workshops, We're actually giving away scholarships today to people that are at our workshop that stuck it out for the whole day, that took a quiz and scored pretty well on the quiz, and are currently enrolled in a college or post high school type education.
Yeah, so we're going to get to those here in just a minute. We got time for one more question.
One more question? Okay, let's take one more.
Hi, I'm Jonathan from Woonsocket, South Dakota. My question's related to tiling. It's easy to see the benefits of it in a wet year or a year where we've got normal precipitation, but are you going to see negative effects on a dry year, especially as we head farther west in South Dakota?
That is a great question. In 2012, we had a pretty dry year. I think most people across the Midwest would say, yeah, 2012 was a tough one. Our best yields on our farm came right over the tile lines. And you say, wait a second, how can that be when you have this dry year, you don't get the rain you want, and it's hot? Shouldn't there be less moisture right over those tile lines? Yeah, there should be less excess moisture. We had a little bit of rain in the early spring. And what happened where we had those tile lines, the water table was a little lower, and it allowed our rooting growth to get deeper. What I'd say for a homework assignment for everyone listening to the show today, this year, go home and dig up some plants in your area. If you're farming, it's easy. Dig it in your field. If you're not farming, find one of Brian's fields and dig up some plants there. He won't mind. But dig up some plants when they're just a few inches tall, when they're 6 inches tall, when they're a foot tall, when they're 2 feet tall, and see how deep those roots are. What we're finding is by the time that corn plant's just a few inches tall, we've got roots that are down a foot deep. So you think about it. When you're right over that tile line, maybe it's at 3 feet depth. How long does it take for roots to be 2 or 3 feet down? Doesn't take that long. And if you've got a water table that's higher than that tile line, maybe it's only a foot down. By the time that corn plant's 4 inches tall, you're already limiting root growth. So by allowing our roots to get deeper early in the season, even in a drought year, tile actually helps us. Now, I'm sure there's examples of where, you know what, we were bone dry for 5 years and something wasn't good. I don't know.
No,
I haven't
really heard those examples ever. Here's the whole thing. You got to understand the basics of tile. What does it do? It only runs when the water table is above the level of the tile line. So the only time where we have issues where guys say, oh, it hurt my yield, is where they put the tile in too deep. When you're in South Dakota, you usually have no reason to put that tile line down at 5 or 6 feet deep. If you put it at 2.5 or 3 feet deep, you only have the water table down a little bit. That's it. And we know at a bare minimum, it's got to be at least a couple feet down. Otherwise, you just don't get good root growth. And by the way, take almost any crop, corn, wheat, soybeans, whatever. If you go out there just a few, maybe 2-3 weeks after planting, a lot of times you'd be shocked at how deep that root can get very quickly. So the point is, we want the water table down a little bit, and then we get better deep root growth real early in the year. So now we have better drought tolerance later in the year because those roots are deep. All right. So anyway, as long as you do that, you should be just fine. And we really don't have any issues. But the other thing that I'll tell you, when we're out in central South Dakota, for example, is you don't need patterned tile in every single field or anything like that. Usually what we're talking about is just spot tile. You hit just a few spots in the field, the valleys, that kind of thing, and that typically solves the problem. It's kind of the same deal here on our own farm.
And here we go. Woonsocket, South Dakota, what have you got? You've got some of those alkali spots, some of those saline spots, salty areas that if we could drain those areas of the field, all of a sudden, wow, our yields come up on any crop that we want to try and grow.
All right. So what we're going to do on the college scholarships, we're actually going to have you come up right after the radio show. We're done here in about 5 minutes. I'm going to make the first, I'll give you the first 9 people, and then we'll get to some of the rest here in just a minute. But anyway, first one, Tyler Vogel from South Dakota State and Brookings. Next one, go Jacks. Haley Nearlingy, Decorah, Iowa, going to Southwest State, Minnesota. Trace Bolsinger from Earlville, Iowa, going to Iowa State. Noah Borsted from Nome, North Dakota, going to the North Dakota State College of Science. Jessica Moon from Wilmington, Ohio, thanks for coming all the way here today, going to Southern State Community College. Allison Stewart from Wayne, Nebraska, going to Wayne State. Alan Wright from Brandon, South Dakota, going to SDSU. That's South Dakota State University, not San Diego State. Jared Sorensen, Mitchell, South Dakota, going to Mitchell Tech. And William Rosgard from Rock Valley, Iowa, going to Dort. We've got 11 more we're going to give away here in just a couple minutes. We probably have time for one more question if we've got somebody else. Let's see, where are people with the questions? Oh,
we told them we were done. We told them we were done.
So anybody have one last question?
All right, right here, right here, the second row.
Right up here.
I'm going to guess that he might be from Nebraska, but I'm not sure.
So my name is...
Oh, there you go, you got it, Mark? Okay, go ahead.
So my name is Logan. I am from Nebraska,
yes.
Stanton, Nebraska. just about to continue my education. I'm a sophomore right now, just kind of looking at where I want to go from here. And as an employer, you mentioned you're looking for more good people. Do you see or notice a big difference in hiring people with a Bachelor of Science versus like a Bachelor of Applied Science or an Associate of Science?
You know,
that's
a great question. And one of the things that's such an opportunity right now in agriculture is everybody's hiring. Whether it's farmers that are looking for somebody to come into the operation, maybe to take over the operation, or maybe just to help them get their work done, or ag retailers, or, boy, any number of different jobs in agriculture. What we're seeing on an ag retail stage, Brian had made a comment earlier. I think one of the biggest things to take from secondary education is just learning how to learn and learning how to work hard, learning how to study, and being open to new ideas. I think those things are good. You know, would it be great if everybody had a PhD level education? Maybe, but it takes a long time to get that. And in the meantime, we need more young people right now in agriculture. So, yeah, I think showing any kind of hey, I got some additional training that could help me in my job is valuable. So I don't know in our industry if there is a premium put on one degree or another in most fields. But do you have any different comments on that, Brian, or would you say any education is certainly beneficial? I guess Brian's going to agree with me. He's not even going to comment on that. He's going to nod. So I would just say get a degree, study your core subjects and what you want to learn, and whether that's running new technical equipment that we're using on the farm and getting a technical type degree or getting a 4-year degree from a traditional university, either way is good. Okay, Brian, you ready with more names to announce here, more scholarship winners?
All right. So let's see. We've got Brianna Hutchison from White Lake, South Dakota, going to Mitchell Tech. We have Anna Jungling from Esteline going to Lake Area Tech up in Watertown. Bryce Lammers from Fortis, Nebraska, going to UNL, University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Bettenhausen from Wishick, North Dakota, going to North Dakota State University. Zachary Luaji from, Cottonwood, Minnesota, going to South Dakota State. Eric Furness, Delmont, South Dakota, going to Concordia. Daniel Kesenich. And I'm going to apologize if I'm mispronouncing some of these names. Lamar's, Iowa, going to South Dakota State University. Josh Dragstra from Sioux Center, Iowa, going to Iowa State. Tanner Fries. Arcadia, Iowa, going to Des Moines Area Community College. And the last two are Keith Replinger from Holdingford, Minnesota, I'm going to guess, going to Bridgewater College. And the last one is...
Bridgewater.
What? What did I say?
Yeah, you put a B in front of it.
It says Bridgewater. Yeah, it's got to be Bridgewater. Got to be Bridgewater. All right. And Nicole Hudson from Harrisburg, South Dakota, going to South Dakota State University. So congratulations to our 20 scholarship winners. If you want to come up afterwards, we've got your checks here, and we'll visit with you just a little bit. And I just want to thank all of you for attending today. Thanks to everybody for listening today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we've also got a number of agronomists right now on the side of the room here. If you've got questions for those people who are in the audience today, we want you to learn as much as you can about what potential opportunities there are out there and what current agronomists would tell you if they could go back and do it all over again. We've got a lot of Ag PhD events like this one coming up, not necessarily collegiate agronomy workshops, but workshops for farmers and those involved in agriculture. You can find the full list at agphd.com. Just click on events and you can pre-register there. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.